So good evening, everybody, and I'm really happy to be back. I'm sorry that last week I had a last-minute cancellation. It was not expected at all, but I'm happy that we were able to reschedule. And lahagdil Torah ulahadira, we have the opportunity now to meet once again and to learn Torah together. I have to say for myself, this has been an extremely intense, very overwhelming and emotionally charged week. Obviously, all of us know that we are knee-deep in Hachana LePesach. I know you're here in school and maybe you're not so hands-on involved, but it's a very, very busy time of year for many of us. I know that I have been inundated with questions and inquiries and shilas and product issues and kashering shilas and all kinds of things that come up every year before Pesach that we all need to give attention to. But on a very, very unexpected opportunity last week, I was asked to go to Eretz Yisrael as well as to Poland for one day each to help with some of the efforts for the Ukrainian refugees. And I've been following the news every day since the start of this crisis, and I'm sure many of us have been doing the same. And as much as you see and as much as you watch and as much as you try to understand, there's nothing that compares to actually being confronted with it and seeing it with your own eyes. You know, sometimes we have the mistaken impression that, you know, refugee, Nebuch, you know, it's a refugee. But you need to understand, I spoke to hundreds of them last week. They are doctors and nurses and lawyers and have regular lives like everybody else does. And this could have easily been us. And unfortunately, it was them. I went to the airport to greet a flight of 250 Olim who were coming from the Ukraine. I would be generous if I said that on that flight, there were maybe 100 pieces of luggage for 250 people. Not a single man under the age of 65 on the plane. Every woman who was there was without a husband. Every family who was there is without a father, because all their fathers and husbands are staying behind to fight this war. It was something that is so hard to understand and so difficult to really wrap our heads around. And as I was experiencing that, and I hope all of us feel a little bit that experience, we need to feel it. If you're going into Pesach this year and feeling that everything is the same as it's been in the past, if the place where your head is right now is which Pesach program I'm going to go on or where I'm going to be and which family members, all of that is wonderful, all of that is nice. But shame on us if that's where our heads are. There are hundreds of thousands of Jews, millions of non-Jews, who are displaced, whose lives have been destroyed. And we need to think about that going into Yom Tov. It's not just about us. It's not about our vacation. It's not about how much we're going to enjoy. We need to make sure that we balance both of these thoughts and both of these understandings all at the same time. Which leads me directly into tonight's topic. I was asked to speak about some topics that are relevant to the Seder, and that's always a very exciting thing for me to do. I always love talking about the Seder, and I hope that you enjoy listening to what many, many presenters have to say about the Seder, but at the same time, I felt so conflicted. How can I really talk about Zman Chayruseinu? How can I talk about what it means to be a Ben Chorin? How can I talk about a time that we have Simcha? Mo'adim LeSimcha, how can that be? When all of this terrible devastation is going on around us. And I think it's an overwhelming challenge, but I think it's something that all of us need to really try to think about this year, about that balance of really feeling Zman Simchaseinu, of feeling Zman Chayruseinu, of understanding what it means to be a Ben Chorin, while at the same time not losing sight, not losing perspective for all that's going on around us in the world. So let's begin with the following. We have a Mishnah in the last parak in Maseches Pesachim, where the Mishnah talks about at the very end of Magid, we wrap everything up by saying a bracha al asher ge'alanu. I don't know about in your homes. I know I come from a very emotional family. My parents are both very, very emotional people. Yes, I know my sister had a baby last week. I heard about it. I heard the same way that you heard. And I happened to have been in Poland that day. And the video went around, and that's how I found out, which is okay. No, it was on the family chat. I just wasn't following everything. There was a lot going on. And next thing I knew, this was a viral video of my parents making a joke with each other about my sister having a baby. My sister was mortified. whatever, it should all be well. But I come from a very emotional home, and I know that every year at the very end of Magid, our family becomes very emotional when we say this bracha, Asher Ga'alanu. We spent a whole night talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim, and it's an opportunity when we get to Asher Ga'alanu to think about not only what happened so many generations ago, but also to think about Asher Ga'alanu V'Ga'alas Avosenu Mitzrayim V'Higiyanu Halayla Hazeh. We make mention of the fact that God has brought us to this moment. Lecho bo matzah umara. We have the opportunity to eat matzah umara. I am boiling hot, you'll pardon me. And then we continue on that bracha and we talk about all the different things that make us proud, that make us excited about Leil HaSeder. And it's wonderful, and it's really nice. And that is the opinion of Reb Tarfon, who's one of the great Tannaim. Along comes his friend Rabbi Akiva, and he says, no, you cannot say Asher Ga'alanu and leave it at that. There's so much more that needs to be included. What more needs to be included? We need to say a second segment of the bracha, and that is, come, everyone can feel comfortable, really. I'm happy wherever you want to be. So the second segment of the bracha Rabbi Akiva says is, you have to say something extra, and that is, Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagienu. That's the second half of the bracha that we say. So Rabbi Tarfon says, you just thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what was. Rabbi Akiva says, no, you can't stop there, you have to say a lot more. Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagienu, we hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would bring us L'mo'adim v'lir galim achirim, to many more yamim tovim, many more opportunities. Smecha b'vinyan irecha, v'sasim ba'avodasecha. We hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring us back to a Beis HaMikdash. V'nochal sham and azvachim min hapsachim. We're going to have the opportunity to eat Karban Pesach, to celebrate a yam tif, aliyah l'regel, all the Jews together. And that is the way we end the bracha. We have to make some kind of remark about our anticipation for Geula and Mashiach. Okay, so it's a very nice discussion, an interesting machlokes, seemed to be pretty trivial, pretty innocuous, but the truth is, I think there's so much here, there's so much going on that we don't even realize, that maybe we don't appreciate, and that's really what I'd like to focus on this evening, because I think, particularly this year, it's an extremely relevant theme to the Yom Tov, to the set of circumstances, to the time of year, and to everything that's going on around us in the world. So let's just give a little bit of a context to who it is that we're talking about, to who it is that we're discussing. Thank you. I'm okay. Thank you. So the Medrash tells us in the Sifri that there were four personalities, four towering figures that lived a life of 120 years, which the Medrash assumes is a life of shlemus, a life of perfection, a life of great accomplishment. Obviously, the first one we're all familiar with is Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu says at the end of the Torah, Ben Mea Ve'esrim Shana Anochi Hayom, where he says, I am 120 years today, and that was the life of Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Medrash says he was not the only one who lived 120 years. There were others. The second one was Hillel HaZaken, who was a leader of his generation. We're all familiar with Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Those are all the students of Shammai and Hillel. But Hillel HaZaken was the towering figure, the towering personality in his generation. After him was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was also a Nasi. He was the leader of his generation. And finally, the Medrash says, Rabbi Akiva. All four of these great people lived a life of shlemus, a life of 120 years. Now let's try to think a little bit about who exactly was Rabbi Akiva and what kind of perspective he gives over to all of us. So it's well known, the Gemara tells us, that Rabbi Akiva lived through the darkest period in Jewish history. Rabbi Akiva lived through the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And as he's watching all of this pillage, as he's watching all of this devastation, he understands that the Jewish community at the time is in a state of disrepair. He realizes that people are despondent, people are hopeless, people do not know what's going to be next. They've lost their right to be in Yerushalayim. They've lost their opportunity to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as closely and as intimately as they used to. And Rabbi Akiva understood that his challenge was to try his best as the leader of the generation to lift and elevate the spirits of the people that were living through this most devastating time. And that is what we find as a recurring theme of the life of Rabbi Akiva. He is the ultimate optimist. Some of the stories might be more familiar than others, but you see it over and over again how he's such a positive thinker, how Rabbi Akiva's job, as he feels his mission is, to be the visionary, to give people hope, to make people have a sense of understanding of their future. So the Gemara tells us a story that has become very famous about Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara tells us that he was once with a number of his contemporaries, a number of Tanoim, and it was right after the Churban Beis Hamikdash, and they were traveling somewhere around Yerushalayim. It's actually the last Gemara, Maseches Makos, if you want to look it up. Makos Daf Chav Dalet. So the Gemara says, you're reminding me, how was your shiur? That was last time I was here. Okay, I tried to log in, they didn't let me in. I'm just saying. Well done. Right before Purim, you were talking about Hachana. I got it, I remember. Erev Shabbos. So the Gemara tells us there that all of the Tanaim are traveling through this horrific devastation, and finally they get to Harat Sofim, and they're able to see the Makam HaMikdash, and they see the devastation of the Beis HaMikdash. And as they're looking at it, all of them begin to cry. Naturally, what else are you going to do? And they're all crying, and they're all falling apart. How can we see such a thing? Not only that, there's no Beis HaMikdash there, but Shualim Hulchubo, there are animals roaming around. You know, I don't know if you've seen, there are so many images from what's going on in Ukraine that are so painful and so devastating, and the loss of life, and I don't know how we can look at this and not cry. But there's something that touches our hearts when we see a shul that is being destroyed. I'm not sure if it's because it brings back images from the Holocaust for all of us. Not sure if it's because a shul just is so central to everything that the life of a Jew is about. But be it as it may, we've all seen these images of shuls being rummaged, shuls being destroyed, shuls being shelled. And it's something that really hits us to the core. And that's what happened. They watch the Beis HaMikdash, the Makam HaMikdash is in complete disrepair. It's totally destroyed. And not only that, they see that there are animals roaming around. And they all begin to cry. Along comes Rabbi Akiva, and he's with all of his friends. And he's smiling, and he's happy. Seems almost inappropriate. I happen to know someone who has a very unusual condition, that every time they're in a tremendous amount of pain, they start laughing instead of crying. So it seems very strange when you're with them and something bad happens, meaning they told me they were once together with their family and the family had heard about the loss of a close relative and everyone was crying and they were just laughing hysterically. So it seems very inappropriate. That's not the condition that Rabbi Akiva had. That's a very unusual condition that somebody else I know has. That is seemingly not what Rabbi Akiva had. And his friends, the other Tanoim, are looking at him like he's insane. What are you excited about? Look what's going on. Do you not understand the gravity of this moment? Do you not understand the significance of what's happening here? Rabbi Akiva turns to them and he says, think about this for a minute. All of this was told to us by the Nevi'im in advance. Sion Sada Techaresh, the Navi says. The Makom HaMikdash, which is referred to as Sion, is going to be like a field that is going to be trampled on. Sada Techaresh, it's going to be have all kinds of instruments driving over it. There's going to be no Beis HaMikdash. The Nevi'im told us that. And look, it came true. Well, said Rabbi Akiva, if that came true, then we have every right to believe that the next part of the Nevuah is going to come true as well. And what is the next part of the Nevuah? Od Yeshua Zakenim Zakenos Berechovos Yerushalayim. We're going to come to a time where there are going to be people who are roaming the streets of Yerushalayim, and we're going to have Yiladim Yilados Vesachkim Berchovoseha, which parenthetically is so interesting. Imagine in your mind for a moment, what's Geula going to look like? And you imagine that there's going to be money falling down from the trees, and no one's ever going to be sick anymore. I don't know, everybody has their own ideas. The Rambam and the Ravid actually have a dispute about what's going to happen when Mashiach comes. And the Rambam says one thing, the Ravid says something else, and the Rambam finally responds and he says, this is one of the aspects of life that we won't know until it happens. It's hard to know. We don't exactly know what it's going to be. But one thing I can tell you I never expected to hear was, you know, we're going to come to a geula and we're going to have people sitting on the side of the street. How nice. We're going to have children playing ball. Really? I've seen that before. That's really not so exciting. You go to the streets of Yerushalayim, Shari Chesed, the old city, and you see there are kids playing soccer, playing ball, running around. You see that there are elderly people sitting on the benches there, taking walks. Really? That's what Geula is? And some suggest, yes, that's what Geula is. When a Jew will no longer have to worry that maybe they're going to be knifed by an attacker who's going to come out of nowhere and destroy them and kill them potentially. Where somebody doesn't have to be worried that maybe a terrorist is going to come out of nowhere and just shoot them. Where maybe we don't have to worry that someone's going to drop a bomb and we're going to have to run to a shelter or maybe lose our lives or who knows what's going to be with our children. Yes, greatest blessing in all of our lives would be if we could just sit calmly have yiladim, misachkim rechovoseh, a bunch of kids playing in the street without having to worry. People taking walks without being afraid that they're going to have to run to an air raid shelter because they only have 30 seconds until they lose their lives. Yes, that's a tremendous gift. Just living in peace and harmony with tranquility, being calm, not being afraid. That is a tremendous gift. But be it as it may, says Rabbi Akiva, if we see with our own eyes that the first stage of this nevuah has come true, then I have every reason to believe that the second half of it is also going to come true. And the same way we experience this terrible devastation, we're also going to come to a time when we're going to experience a tremendous rise of the Jewish people, when we're going to come back and have a geula, to which all of his friends turn around and say, Akiva, nichamtanu. Rabbi Akiva was able to console his friends, and Rabbi Akiva's perspective was very, very much appreciated by all of his friends who were with him. So the Maharsha in the back of that Gemara asked such an obvious question. We know in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Tisha B'Av, it's based on a Gemara Maseches Bava Basra. The Gemara says that when you go and you see Yerushalayim B'Churbana, when you see the Makam HaMigdash B'Churbana, you have to rip Kriya. So ask the Maharsha. This is very nice. Rabbi Akiva got up, he gave a drasha, made everyone smile, made them feel good. It's very nice. Bottom line, you got to rip Kriya. So what was he doing? You have to rip Kriya when you pass the Makam HaMigdash B'Churbana. Answers the Maharsha, you're right. Of course Rabbi Akiva ripped Kriya. But at the same time that he's ripping Kriya, this is what he's thinking. Yes, we need to rip Kriya because it's a devastating scene. It's horrible for us to watch this. We don't like to experience things like this. We don't want to see Churban. We don't want to see devastation. But at the same time, Rabbi Akiva is thinking, Od Yeshu Zekenim Zekenes Barachovas Yerushalayim. A Jew has that ability to feel on the one hand, Zman Cheruseinu, yes, you're going to go away to your home, you're going to go with your family, you're going to be in a hotel, you're going to fly to Israel, wherever you're going to be for Yantiv, it's all great. It does not mean that at the same time that you're feeling all of that, that you're feeling this Zman Simchaseinu, that you also need to feel the Rabbi Akiva tearing Kriya at the very same time. It's the way all of us are. Life is complicated. And we have the ability to mix and to try to juggle both of these emotions at the same time and to appreciate each of them independently and to understand that both of them are expected of us. When there's so much going on in the world around us, we need to have both of these kinds of experiences. Just think for a moment about the experience of Rabbi Akiva. During Sfiras HaOmer, it's famous that we observe some sort of mourning, some sort of period of avelus. And it's well known that the reason why is because the Gemara Nivamas tells us that Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students, and all of them died b'perek echad. Very nice, I mean, not a nice story, terrible story, horrible story. Just think about it for a minute. You know, I often think about it this way, just l'saber es ha'ozen, just to bring it down to our level a little bit. During the height of COVID, 2 years ago, between Purim and Pesach, right, that's when nobody knew what was going on. The doctors couldn't get a handle on anything. We were all just scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. Rabbi Axarot and I, who worked together in the Young Israel of Woodmere, attended and participated in more than 50 funerals in less than 30 days. Understand what that means? We would show up at a cemetery, and there were lines of hearse out the gates of the cemetery. You couldn't get in. And there was no one else there. They weren't allowing family and friends to come. So it was like a rabbi officiating and just lines of hearse. I actually fell asleep at the Seder, Leil HaSeder, 2 years ago, which is a big no-no. Don't try that at home. I'm sitting there with my kids. We're doing whatever we're supposed to be doing. I literally could not keep my eyes open. It wasn't because I was so tired. The night before Pesach, there was a conference call that my father and I were on for most of the night. Because New York State had said, if the Jewish community doesn't figure out how to deal with the dead bodies of the Jewish community on Pesach, on Yantiv, if you don't figure out how to make some kind of accommodation that they can be buried on Yantiv, we're going to have such a buildup after a 3-day Yantiv, we're going to have no option but to cremate all the Jewish bodies during that duration of Yantiv. That's what we were talking about. That's how many Jewish lives are being lost every single day. The morgues in New York State could not handle the volume of deaths. And that pales in comparison to what Rabbi Akiva had to deal with. So the Gemara says, they all died b'perekecha. They all died in one segment of time. When was that? Mipesach until Lag BaOmer, right? They died in about 30 days. So just anyone who's a mathematician here will understand. 24,000 people die in a span of a month. So how many levayas is Rabbi Akiva showing up to every single day? A few hundred. Imagine a few hundred levayas every day. And not just that, these are people who he feels very close with. These are his closest talmidim. I remember in the beginning of COVID when I had to go to Muncie to participate in a levaya, to run a levaya of a young man who passed away in his 40s. He had six young children, and I had to sit there with the kids and explain this to them. What am I supposed to say to them? Imagine doing that every single day. 300-400 families every day sitting down with these little kids, these yisomim, these orphans, these almanas. Terrible. Every single day Rabbi Akiva has to sit there and deal with this. And therefore the Gemara says, after this happened, V'haya ha'olam shamei. The world was empty. The world was desolate. What was going to be? The whole world was just destroyed. But says the Gemara, At Shabbat Rabbi Akiva, Eitzel Rabbi Senu Shabbadara. You would think, what does a man like that do? You close up shop, and you just hide in your corner for the rest of your life. You're a major failure. What you've worked your entire life to build, citadels of Torah, has just been destroyed in the course of 1 month. Just give up. Rabbi Akiva says, no, that's not an option. At Shabbat, Eitzel Rabbi Senu Shabbadaram, the Gemara says, he goes around the entire country, in the entire land of Israel, trying to find who is it that he can teach. And the Gemara finally says, he finds five Tanaim who are willing to learn once again. Let's rebuild Torah. And who are those Tanaim, by the way? Reb Meir, Reb Yehuda, Reb Yossi, Reb Shimon, Reb Elazar. By the way, those are the ones, if you look through the Gemara carefully, those are the ones who are the foundation of the entire Torah Shebaal Peh. Every Mishnah that we have is based on the foundations of these five Talmidim who came along after all the devastation. Rabbi Akiva stays focused. Rabbi Akiva understands that we always have the ability to rebuild. We always have the ability to shift perspective. If we're determined enough, if we're focused enough, if we're resilient enough, we have the ability to do something even though we've experienced something horrible, something completely devastating. That was the life of Rabbi Akiva. Which is why I believe Reb Tarfon, who was a very close friend of Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says in Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Samach Vav, that Reb Tarfon said about his friend, Akiva, Kalaporish Vimcha Kiporish Minachayim. Anyone who doesn't have Rabbi Akiva in his life, it's as if he doesn't have life at all. That's a very nice thing to say about a friend, but obviously it means so much more. Reb Tarfon is saying, we live in the most devastating period in Jewish history. If I didn't have you, Rabbi Akiva, you're my therapist, you're my everything. If I didn't have you, Rabbi Akiva, to lift my spirits, to give me perspective, to make me believe in a future, what life would I have? There's nothing left. I've given up. All of us have given up. And you're the only one who seems to have some kind of perspective that's helpful to us. And that perhaps is the comment that Reb Tarfon means to say when he talks in such glowing terms about his friend, Rabbi Akiva. It's fascinating. There's a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah. Reb Soloveitchik used to mention this in many different drushas that he gave, where the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Borei Olamos Machrivan. We read Parshas Bereishis and we imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu just said the world should come into being, and that's what it is, and that's what it continues to be. But the Medrash says HaKadosh Baruch Hu created hundreds of worlds, didn't come out the way he wanted them to, and he destroyed them. Now what does that mean, Esther of Soloveitchik? It didn't come out the way he wanted to? We all know, we say in our davening every day, Baruch Omer Ve'oseh. All the Ribbono Shel Olam needs to do is say something and it comes into existence. It's a reality. So what happened? He failed. He tried a few times. He created people. He said, I don't really like the way they came out. Let's try this again. I don't like this. I made the Canadian Rockies. I don't know. Let's try that over again. I don't know. I don't really like the way this looks, that looks. That's the way, that's really what happened? How can we say such a thing? So what is the Medrash teaching us? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have gotten it right the first time. But said of Soloveitchik, that what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to teach all of us is There are times in our lives where we make mistakes, or where we face unfortunate realities that are beyond our control, not because of our mistakes. But devastating times in our lives every so often come about. And what we're taught here is that even when you're confronted with one of those, and your entire world has been destroyed, Borei Olam Usamach Rivan, you've worked so hard to create something and now everything imploded and it's all gone into the oblivion, into the abyss. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself promised us you can always rebuild a world. The Ribono Shel Olam himself was Borei Olamos Umachrivan because he wanted to teach all of us that there is that possibility. We all have that possibility. And when you see a world that is imploding, when you see a world of devastation, of pillage all around you, understand that there's always that opportunity to rebuild it and to recreate. So, I find it interesting, actually, just as a historical piece, the Medrash writes that after this massive persecution in the days of Rabbi Akiva, we know that Rabbi Akiva actually lost his life. He was one of the Asara Aruge Malchus. After all this oppression, so we're told, Nichnusu kol chachmei hador l'usha. All the chachamim of that generation migrated to Usha. What was there? Rabbi Yehuda lived there. And they all said to Rabbi Yehuda, what do we do now? And Rabbi Yehuda let out a message and he said, Kol mishu lamed yavu v'yilmod. Anybody who knows how to learn Torah should come. And anybody who doesn't know how to learn Torah should also come. You're all invited. We're going to build again. It's no coincidence that they all go after all of this horrific devastation, after they lost the Asara Haruge Malchus and so much terrible calamity has befallen the Jewish people. It's no coincidence that the person they turn to is the student of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yehuda Barabbi Lai, and they say, you learned from your teacher, Rabbi Akiva, how we're supposed to deal with this. Tell us now what we are supposed to do. Tell us how we move forward from this horrible experience. You know, in the very beginning of Magid, we start off by saying, Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Elazar, five Tanaim were all sitting together on Pesach night, and they were talking, they got carried away, they're talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's so wonderful. And all of a sudden, before you know it, their Talmidim come in and say, hey, you're oblivious, but by the way, it's time to daven Shacharis, let's get going, everybody has to bench, everyone has to get moving, and that's what they do. So it's a very nice story, but it's a problematic story. It's a problematic story. First of all, forget about the problem for a second. What you see from that Gemara is, from that passage in the Haggadah, is that even the greatest of the Tanaim spent their evening on Pesach night talking about Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. They weren't saying gematrias. They weren't saying all kinds of fancy ideas, tying this word to the other word, and finding all these cute little things. No. They were talking about the story of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is what we're supposed to do. I remember in my parents' home growing up, my father was very makbid, continues to be makbid, that you finish all the four cups of wine by chatzos, which is not so easy all the time to do. So in Shulchan Aruch it says, l'chatchila, that's what you're supposed to do. Finish all four cups of wine by chatzos, not just the afikoman. So my father was always careful, but the problem is we had a bunch of little kids in the house. So what are you going to do? So my father always told us, your teachers in yeshiva and school taught you everything about the Seder, everything about the Haggadah. You know when we're going to say it? Tomorrow by the day meals, you're also allowed to say it. And we all used to save our things for the day meals. And when it came to the Seder, we all sat and just talked about Yetzias Mitzrayim. My father could give shiurim for hours on end about all the different intricacies in the Rambam Hilchos Karban Pesach and Hilchos Yetzias Mitzrayim and Hilchos everything, but he didn't. He spoke to us about the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to talk amongst ourselves about the themes of Yetzias Mitzrayim, about Inyani Emunah and Hashkafa that come out from the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what the objective of the evening is. I remember every year after Pesach, the Rebbe always used to come to class in elementary school and he would say, okay, what time did everybody finish the Seder? And everybody would say, like, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. And I always raised my hand. He's like, no, Shechter, what about you? I'm like, I don't know, 11:30. He's like, do you live in a Jewish home? What do you mean, 11:30? I'm like, slightly. Anyway, so this was the experience, but you see that the Tanaim, it says they were talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. They were telling over the story, which is what we're supposed to do. And the Rambam says, that's clearly what the obligation is, to tell a story. That's what Leil HaSeder is all about. So the problem here is, with this story, is twofold. Number one, it says they were all in Bnei Brak. What were they doing in Bnei Brak? I am a subim b'Bnei Brak. What's so special about Bnei Brak? So the answer is, Rabbi Akiva lived in Bnei Brak. So they went to have the Seder by Rabbi Akiva's house. Very nice. He's a very gracious host. But two problems. Number one, Rabbi Lezer is one of the Tanaim who is listed there in the group of people. Rabbi Lezer was the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. Why is he going to his student's house for Pesach? Should be the other way around. Why is the old man going to the young man, Rabbi Akiva? And number two, if you know, the Gemara writes in Maseches Sukkah, the Gemara tells us it's never good to be lazy. You should always be proactive, you should always be involved, you should be engaged, you should be energetic, never be lazy. However, the Gemara says there's one exception. Rabbi Lazar says, note the name, Rabbi Lazar says, Mishabeach Anias HaAtzlanim. I give great praise to the lazy people, one time a year. When is the one time a year? On Yom Tov. Why is it good to be lazy on Yom Tov? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar says, because Yom Tov, you're not supposed to be traveling around. You should be going to Uman and staying away from your family. And Yom Tov, you're not supposed to be here or there. Yom Tov, you're supposed to be with your family. And it so happens that the lazy people are too lazy to travel anywhere, so they stay with their families. So Rabbi Lazar says, Mishabeach Anias HaAtzlanim. It's horrible to be lazy, but once a year it's a very good attribute. It's a good thing to do. On Yom Tov, you shouldn't be by your teachers, by your Rabbeim. On Yom Tov, you shouldn't be in holy places. On Yom Tov, you should be with your family. Well, Rabbi Lazar, that's really what you feel. What are you doing in Rabbi Akiva's home on Leil HaSeder? Busted, Rabbi Lazar. Right? We all read the Haggadah and we saw Rabbi Lazar was not at home. What's he doing in Bnei Brak? Why is he by Rabbi Akiva's house? How do you explain that? So all kinds of interpretations are given. The Margaliyos Hayam writes in his commentary on Maseches Sanhedrin that maybe the answer is that there's a Yerushalmi that says they went on a political mission somewhere, they had to go overseas, they got back Erev Pesach, they got into the port in Yafo. What's the closest town that they were able to go to without missing Yom Tov? Bnei Brak, great, wonderful, so they ended up at Rabbi Akiva's house coincidentally. Okay, sounds hard to really believe that, but that's what he says. Sfasemis has a pshat, everybody has their own interpretation. One of my great teachers, Rav Mordechai Kalbach in Yerushalayim, suggested such a beautiful insight where he said, maybe this story happened the first Pesach after Churban Beis HaMikdash. Imagine. Imagine the people who were remembering what Pesach was like when we had a Beis HaMikdash. Here they were with Karban Pesach. Millions of Jews doing Aliyah the Regel. The Gemara says when they said Hallel, it was like the roofs were coming off of the homes in Yerushalayim. It was so intense, it was so overwhelming, that experience of spending Yom Tov in Yerushalayim, and particularly Pesach. Imagine that. And now this year, we're looking at Churban Beis HaMikdash. How are we supposed to feel as Manchei Rusenu when we feel everything other than Bnei Churban? When we feel that now we're in Galus, we are Mishubadim once again, we have a terrible life in front of us, nothing about our lives as they are now is good. How are we supposed to celebrate Pesach? What is this supposed to mean to us? You know what the only answer is? We're going to go to the home of Rabbi Akiva and we're going to have him give us perspective. The only way to celebrate Zman Chayruseinu in a year like this is to go to Bnei Brak. And while it's true that on a normal year we should all be at home, we should be with our families, we shouldn't be traveling around, but this year we have no choice. This year, the only way that we'll experience Zman Chayruseinu is by going to the home of Rabbi Akiva and Bnei Brak. And that's why everybody ended up there. That's what was unique about that Pesach. And perhaps let's circle back to where we began, and that is, when we have this bracha at the end of Magid of Asher Ge'alanu B'Ga'alos HaBaseinu B'Mitzrayim, Rabbi Tarfon says, you have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Leil HaSeder for giving us the opportunity to come out of Mitzrayim. It's wonderful. Along comes Rabbi Akiva and he says, you cannot stop there. You have to think ahead. You have to think forward. You have to think positively. We may be in Galus, we may have a difficult set of circumstances, but says Rabbi Akiva, as part of our bracha Asher Ge'alanu in Magid, we need to also have an additional paragraph and we need to say, Hein Hashem Elokeinu Yagiyenu L'Mo'adim V'Lirgalim Acherim. Smeichem B'Binyan Irecha. Here we are in the United States, and we yearn for a geula, and it's disproportionate the amount of times that we talk about it in our davening every day. We mention this so many times, that we want a geula, and we don't have it. So how should we feel Zman Cheruseinu? Says Rabbi Akiva, you need to add in that whole additional paragraph. You need to talk about how we look forward, how we yearn, how we aspire toward a geula. We cannot despair, we cannot be hopeless. When there's so much ruin, when there's so much carnage all around us in the world. When we turn on the news every day and we just never know what we're going to hear next. Which terrible thing just happened this time? But that shouldn't stop us from looking forward, from being positive, from living lives like Rabbi Akiva. And that is the underlying theme of the entire text of the Haggadah. That's where it brings us. To look forward, to be hopeful, and to be excited about our ultimate redemption. My father has often told me, in the name of Reb Soloveitchik, there's a very famous Gemara in the end of Maseches Yuma. I'm sure many of us have heard this passage. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Lifnei mi atem mitar umi mitar eschem, Avichem shabashamayim. So what is the significance of that statement? Lifnei mi atem mitar umi mitar eschem, Avichem shabashamayim. Perhaps the significance is, imagine, it used to be, Rabbi Akiva remembers, let's say, for example, somebody was Mechal Shabbos. So what did that person do? Went to the Beis HaMikdash the next opportunity they had. You said a little Slach Lanu, you offered a Karban, you spoke to the Kohen, whatever it was, and you're back to where you started with your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch. Imagine the first Shabbos after Churban Beis HaMikdash. Somebody walks into a room, mistakenly turns on the lights. It's gone forever. What do I do now? There's no Karban. There's no way to do tshuva. Along comes Rabbi Akiva and he says, no, you're making a mistake. Lifnei mi atem mitar umi mitar eschem. Even when we had a Beis HaMikdash and we had Karbanos, it was never about the Karban. That's not what this is. It was Avichem Sheba Shamayim. It was your father. And your father has not been destroyed. You did something wrong. You were Mechal Shabbos. You need to bring a Karban. You need to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You need to work on that relationship again. You still have the opportunity to do that. Even when we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash, you have not lost that ability to be close to the Ribono Shel Olam. Which is why one of the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva writes, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, a famous Talmud of Rabbi Akiva writes, when he talks about the Jewish people, he says, "Bechal makom shegalu shechina imahem." Everywhere the Jewish people traveled, the Shechina was always there. Rabbi Akiva tells us, the Shechina is always here. Don't despair, don't give up just because you're living a life without a Beis HaMikdash, without a Geula. It doesn't mean that you don't have the ability to be living a reality of a Geula kind of experience, of being closely connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So on Leil HaSeder, we talk about many, many tragedies and many difficulties. Many of our families may have the practice of telling stories from our own families, from our grandparents, what they went through, in Russia and Europe and Lithuania and Poland, all kinds of different stories that we all may have in our own family heritage. And all of those fit into the story of Sikra Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's all part of the story of the Jewish people. But as we do all of that, Rabbi Akiva says, don't forget that this evening is Man Cheruseinu. Don't forget that as much as we have difficulty around us now in the world, and as much as there's devastation that we all see around us, is also an opportunity to look forward and to be positive. Because the situation can always change. The Maharal writes, there's a very unusual detail that we find both by Purim and once again in the story of Pesach. By Purim, you'll notice in the Megillas Esther, over and over again it says, Maharu, quickly bring Haman, quickly bring Mordechai, quickly do this. Why is everything in such a rush? You ever watch a video of the President of the United States? He's not running. He shows up when he's supposed to show up, does what he's supposed to do. He's not in a rush. Why is everything such a rush with Achashverosh? You're in charge of the world. Take it easy. You're on your own time. What's the rush? And the same is when it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have this element, this aspect of Yetzias Mitzrayim of chipazon. Why are they in such a rush? You waited so many years to get out of Mitzrayim. So what, another few minutes to let the dough rise? You couldn't give me another 5 minutes, God? What's this about? I have to eat matzah? I don't enjoy matzah. Why do I have to do this? The answer, writes the Maharal, is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to understand that I don't need time for a miracle to play out. Once it's the moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided that a miracle is supposed to come, that the situation is supposed to change, God doesn't need time like we do to work it out and to plan it, and it should be just like this or just like that. If the Ribbono Shel Olam decides that it's time for the situation to dramatically change and be completely different from what we see it to be and what we envision, that will happen. B'chipazon, maharu. We don't need time to watch that play out. We don't need time to allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan to play out in its entirety. It can happen in a moment's notice. So I'll just close with one story that may bless you, that made such an impression on me. It was in the Israeli newspapers about a year and a half ago. It was the week of Rosh Hashanah. Not this Rosh Hashanah, but a year ago. And the story is written by a woman whose name is Hagit Ryan. I assume nobody here has ever heard of her. Anybody? Hagit Ryan writes the following story. And she says, 14 years ago, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, I stood there, like every Jewish woman in the world, and I was prepared to light my candles before Yom Tov, as we always do. But she says, this year Rosh Hashanah was very different than the ones that I'd experienced prior to this year. You see, she writes, because this year, Haya kechodesh v'chatzi acharei shebeni binaya. This was a month and a half after my son Binaya nafal b'melchemet Lebanon Hashniya. He was killed in the Second Lebanon War, my young son. And that was in the middle of the summer. And here I am, just a few weeks later, I come to Rosh Hashanah, and I'm standing about to light candles. And she writes, we all know that the practice is when we light candles on Erev Yom Tov, we say not only the bracha lahadlik ner, but we make a second bracha of Shehecheyanu. And she says to herself, I stood there, and I said to myself, Hirgashti, I felt she'ani lo mesugelet levarech be'ofen amiti. I am a real person. I am an honest person. I don't say things that I don't mean. How am I supposed to say Shehecheyanu when I just lost my son a few weeks ago, who's in his 20s? What am I thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for? For bringing me Shehecheyanu v'higiyanu lazman hazeh? That he brought me to this moment in my life? This is what I say thank you for. This is an awful place to be in my life. I would never have wanted this. I would never have imagined this for myself. So what am I saying Shehecheyanu about? And she writes, I knew that if I would say it, it just wouldn't be appropriate, because it simply wasn't true. I cannot say Shehecheyanu. And she says, Amadati mul haneirot im dma'ot be'inayim. I stood there in front of the candles, and I was crying hysterically. And she says, Hispalalti, this is why we love people who are very spiritually inclined. Most of us would just break down. Rachmana litzlan, we should never be faced with such a tragedy. But she broke down, and as that happened, she began to offer a tefillah. And her tefillah was, She'akabel kochot otvunot nechonot, that I should have the strength, or that I should have some kind of perspective that the Ribbono Shel Olam will give me, kedei levarech b'simcha. And she asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, give me some kind of thought, give me some kind of understanding of what it means to say Shehecheyanu at a moment like this in my life. Acharei zman she'nirali kamo netzach, it felt like an eternity that I was standing there. Histakalti pitom misaviv, suddenly I turned around. And she says, I saw behind me my seven children, all my sons and daughters-in-law, my grandchildren. And she says, when I turned around and I saw all of that, pitom hevanti, suddenly I understood, kein Shehecheyanu. There's what to say Shehecheyanu about. Is life horrible? Did I lose a child? Would I ever have envisioned myself being in this place? Of course I would not have. Of course I would never have asked the Ribbono Shel Olam to do this to me. This is the worst nightmare of a parent. But she says, I have what to say Shehecheyanu about. Even at a moment like this, I can say Shehecheyanu. And she writes, I said Shehiyanu al kol hayesh hazeh. I said Shehiyanu on everything that I do have, on all that I'm privileged to have in my life. She says, I let out a Shehiyanu that I think they heard me on the other side of the world, because it was such an intense emotional feeling of Shehiyanu. And she writes, I hope that this is a feeling that I'll never forget for the rest of my life, because it was so powerful. Chasam Sofer writes in a tshuva, when he describes, the Gemara tells us in the second parak of Pesachim, which items you're allowed to use for maror on Pesach night. So the Gemara lists a few different items. And one of them is referred to as tamcha. Taf mem chaf aleph. Some kind of vegetable that was able to be used, writes the Chasam Sofer. Tamcha really stands for tamid misaprim kivod kale. As we eat the maror and we remind ourselves of the terrible calamity going on in the world, as we remind ourselves of these horrible situations that we wish didn't exist in our world, we say at the same time, Tamid misaprim kevod keel, we have what to be grateful for. Tagidi toda al hayesh bechayechem. Say Shehiyanu on all that you do have. And don't use this evening just to focus on all that is imperfect, on all that we don't have. It's a similar idea that's quoted by the Maharil, not the Maharal. The Maharil is one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, where he says that one of the vegetables that's mentioned in the poskim that we're able to use for karpas is something that's referred to as afya. Aleph pe yud aleph, and he says, kikel po yeshuas ata. It's what we think about as we eat the karpas, as we think about bitter things, as we think about maror. It's kikel po yeshuas ata. It's tamid misaprim kevod keel. We can have all of those emotions all at the same time, because we have what to look forward to. We have what to appreciate. We have what to have a perspective about. And as we come to this Leil HaSeder, at this very, very painful and difficult time in the world, and it really is, and it pains me so much that I no longer feel as pained by what's going on as I did 6 weeks ago. I know that 6 weeks ago, I wasn't able to eat normally, I wasn't sleeping normally. Every conversation that I had with anyone, somehow, whatever they were calling about, somehow turned into a discussion about what's going on in Ukraine and how can it be, and I can't believe it, it's 2022, we live in a democratic society, in a normal world, how can this be? And here we are 6 weeks later, just moving on with our lives, when millions of lives are being destroyed. I saw it with my own eyes. I stood there in Yerushalayim last week with 100 orphans from Ukraine who are now relocated to the outskirts of Beit Shemesh. I stood at the Kotel with them for the first time. They have nothing. I handed them out gift cards to buy clothing. They don't have anything. They have no family. They have no community. They don't speak the language. They have nothing. You look at all of that and you ask yourself, how am I sleeping at night? How am I just thinking about which clothing I'm going to wear this Yom Tov? And how many pairs of clothing I need to change into, because every time I go down to the lobby of the hotel, I don't want to look the same. That's where our heads are. There are bigger things to be thinking about. There are more important and more serious consequences to everything that's going on in the world. We should have a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. We should have an enjoyable Yom Tov. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to celebrate Zman Chayruseinu. But we cannot do that at the expense of all that's going on in the world. We have to keep both perspectives in front of us. It will make us feel Miyagon L'Simcha. Me'afela lior gadol. Take a moment this Pesach to pray for all those who are waiting so desperately to have their moment of miyagon l'simcha, me'afela lior gadol, mishibul l'giula. Think about all those people. Think about those women who landed in Eretz Yisrael last week, who don't have husbands, who don't have fathers, who never know whether they'll be reunited again, who have absolutely nothing, an entire world left behind, an entire legacy, everything they've built for years is gone. It's in the oblivion, in the abyss. Think about those people. When you ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He should bring us Mishiva L'Geula, don't just say it. Ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu this year that all those who need to have a Geula, All those who are looking to go me'afela li'or galo, maybe you don't feel it as acutely because our lives are so amazing here in the United States. Think about all those who do need our tefillah. Think about all those who do wish hashata hacha l'shana haba be'ara de Yisrael. All those people who are stuck, who wish so desperately for nothing else other than to be in the land of Eretz Yisrael. I spoke to a woman who was in the airport with us. I asked her, do you have any relatives here in Eretz Yisrael? She said, no. Have you ever been here to visit? No. Do you have any plans? What are you going to do? She says, to be honest, I have no idea where I'm going from the airport this evening. It's 2 o'clock in the morning when we met. She has no idea where she's going from here, from the airport. But she said, I can say with a full heart that I'm excited to finally be in the home of the Jewish people. That's what it means to think about Hashata Hafa, Hashana Haba Be'ara Di Yisrael. It's overwhelming to think about what are we willing to sacrifice to go to Eretz Yisrael. I'm not willing to give up my house, my car, everything I have. Am I? Look at this woman who came without a husband, without anybody else, without anything other than the shirt on her back and the pair of pants that she was wearing. And she says, I'm excited to finally be in the home of the Jewish people. It's where we all belong. It's what we all aspire toward. It's what we daven for every single day. But we need to offer a special tefillah this Yom Tov as we experience what it means to be B'nai Chorin. We need to take time to think about all that's going on around us, to take that into the perspective, to make it offset the experience of B'nei Chorin versus Shibud, Me'afela Lior Gadol, all of that needs to be taken in. But Rabbi Akiva taught us, as the one who is such an underlying, central figure of the Seder, Rabbi Akiva taught us, I lived through Churban in my life. I know exactly what it is personally. And I rebuilt, and I restored, and I am committed to give over to all of you, says Rabbi Akiva, that you can do the same. This is why we mentioned the story about Rabbi Akiva and all of his chaverim in the beginning of the Seder. And this is why we end off Magid with a comment of Rabbi Akiva who says the very same. So I wish all of you safe travels wherever you happen to be going, home, Eretz Yisrael, wherever you are. We should have the opportunity, b'nochal sham, min hazvachim u'min hapsachim. It's not too late. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can bring us a geula. We aspire to that. We look forward to that day. Everyone should have a Chag Hasher V'Sameach. It's a pleasure to be back again, and a good night, everybody. Thank you.